For many of us, music leads to motion. We clap or move to the rhythm of the beat. It's something we don't really think about, but obviously something's going on in the brain. My next guest is looking at what that might be. Jessica Grahn is a professor of psychology at the University of Western Ontario and a researcher in the relatively new field of music neuroscience. She's just received a grant to explore music, the brain, and how we move, research that could lead to treatments for movement and balance disorders like Parkinson's and Huntington's disease. We've reached Jessica Grahn at her home in London. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why are you interested in how the brain processes music and translates that into movement?
It's something that's really fascinated me for a long time. I think I've always been interested in the brain. I can't really remember a time I wasn't. And when you just go to the dance floor, it's amazing to me. You look how some people are so beautifully, perfectly synchronized. Every movement they do is lined up with something in the music. Whereas other people, it doesn't seem like it matters at all what's on the DJ's playlist. They're doing whatever they feel, and they have no sense of the beat or the rhythm whatsoever.
Notwithstanding those bad dancers, are humans born with an ability to keep a beat?
There's evidence that this might develop really quite early. So if you look at very young babies under a year, they often spontaneously show movement to the beat when you play them different types of music. So one of the things that this makes us wonder is, why did this develop in the first place? And there's lots of evolutionary speculation about how perhaps groups of hunter-gatherers that synchronized together, you know, through maybe dance around the campfire, ended up with more altruistic behavior, and so this was selected for. But at the moment, a lot of that is still speculation.
Are other primates, like monkeys, able to do this, to keep a beat?
No, that's one of the things that's really interesting. If we see any sense of rhythm in other animals, it tends to be in birds, who are evolutionarily pretty far removed from us, but none of our non-human primate relatives seem to even show the ability to tap to a simple metronome, let alone to something complex like music.
So they can't even be taught to clap along?
No. So there are researchers in Mexico that did try to do this exact task, where they ask people... humans and non-human primates to just listen to a simple, you know, beep, 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 and tap along. And what humans will do is they will learn very quickly to start the movement just before the beep sounds so that their tap is right on the beat. What the monkeys seem to do is always respond after. They react to the sound instead of tapping with the sound.
Interesting. And yet we find so much rhythm in nature, you know, waves, our heartbeat. What do you think is actually happening in our brains?
Yeah, and this is an excellent question. So one of the ways that we can is using brain scanning techniques like functional magnetic resonance imaging. And this is some of the work I've done in the past. And what we find with music is it's not about the melody or the pitch or the harmony. It's really about the rhythm. Mm. And when you put people in a brain scanner and you play them different types of rhythms, even if they're staying perfectly still, most of the brain areas that seem to be responding are the ones that are involved in controlling movement. So there seems to be something actually fundamental about hearing these sequences in time and hearing these rhythms that activates areas of the brain that respond to movement.
So the way that we perceive music and whether it's pleasant to us, it has nothing to do with the way it sounds, per se, the melody of it. It is with just those rhythms, the patterns.
We think that so most of the studies have pointed to that this is a sense of beat that really matters. But one thing we're really hoping to do is look at music, as you mentioned, to optimize treatments for Parkinson's or Huntington's patients. So there's some evidence from previous work that playing music to these patients sometimes improves their walking. And what most of these studies are really focused on is matching the beat rate of the music to the step rate of the person walking. But again, going back to the dance floor, we certainly know there are people who have a very good sense of the beat. So what we're wondering is if we can capitalize on other aspects of the music that might induce us to move that aren't related so much to the beat to really improve our selection of music for these patients. So that might be something like the energy level in the music or the familiarity you have with the music or how much you enjoy it. Because that seems to be the sort of thing, anecdotally, people report gets them out on the dance floor. Huh. Because rhythm helps, but these other features are also important.
What do you think explains those people with the two left feet?
That's an excellent question. So we're doing some research on this now where we're just getting a huge number of people into the lab to be tested and testing their rhythmic abilities, but also their language abilities and movement abilities to see if we can work out what the relationship is between all of these. As yet, I would have to say we don't really know.
Interesting. You mentioned language. Is there a connection then between our ability to have rhythm and language?
There have only been a few studies done with this, but it does look like, for example, children with dyslexia tend to have a reduced sensitivity to the beats in particular types of rhythms. We're not sure which comes first. Is it the rhythm or the language? So that's one of the things that remains to be worked out. But there does seem to be a relationship.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Now, and I mentioned in the introduction that your field of study, music neuroscience, is a relatively new one. Why are researchers like you now exploring how the brain processes music from pitch and melody and now rhythm?
Yeah, so one of the things that's great about music is it taps so many brain functions. You're testing your memory. You know, people can listen to music that they haven't heard in 25 years and still remember all the words and sing along. And that's a pretty amazing feat. But it also involves processing of complex sounds, movements, attention. You know, musical training requires learning a sort of visual language and translating it into sound and movement. So there are a lot of things that we can investigate just about how the brain works in general by using music.
It's fascinating. I know, obviously, you're just conducting all this research now, but why do you think it is that our bodies will react that way to hearing music?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. So one of the things I think might be going on is that if you ask people to try to move together and they're watching each other and they only have visual signals, it's actually very difficult to keep track of more than one or two people at the same time. But with sound, it's very easy for everyone to synchronize. And in, you know, now we have this sort of iPod culture where everybody's listening to music and they don't have to do anything to make it themselves except the button. But if you think about the way music must have evolved and how it was performed in hunter-gatherer societies, everybody had to contribute to the music making because there were no recording devices and no playing devices. So if you're going to make music, you're going to have to move. There's really a way, in, you know, like I said, in the context of how music evolved, to create that music without moving.
I wonder if there are implications, too, on other things like sports, for example, other things that require sort of a rhythm in a way, whether music would actually enhance your ability to play a sport.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. So I don't think people have looked at it that way around, but there are certainly lots of musicians who steal strategies from the sports learning literature for their own practice.
Well, Jessica, I look forward to hearing the results of all the studies that you're doing. Thank you very much for sharing some of this morning.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jessica Grahn is a professor of psychology at the University of Western Ontario.